the dulcet tones of crisscross applesauce. Welcome back to Sports Byline USA, coast to coast on American Forces Radio Network. It's Tuesday in the first hour. We check in with our friend Karen Lyle from SalesportTalk.com, also in her home in the East Bay. Karen, we've been saying that for almost the better part of a year now, haven't we?
I never would have believed it. but I do get to go out sailing every week, so that's my one redeeming thing.
Well, yes, that's nice. I would be doing the same thing if I had a boat. Speaking of boats, our America's Cup expert Christopher Kane is with us, and you might say, well, this race isn't until next year, and we just talked with Chris last week. What could be new? And the answer is, Chris, a lot has happened in the last week down in New Zealand, hasn't it?
Yeah, we actually had something called, it was the Christmas Cup. It was kind of a preseason scrimmage, and it was the only time until the America's Cup that we're going to see all four boats fighting in anger on the waters off Auckland. And, it was interesting because this was the only time we saw them really lining up against each other since all the races were canceled this summer. And some concerns that Karen and I have had pretty much since the British put their boat in the water, unfortunately, came true last week.
Well, it's true that the British team had some boat problems, and we don't know all the details because a lot of these things are kept secret. So they didn't win any of the races in this cup, but the American Magic team did fantastic. And all of these teams are really great competitors. So what it really comes down to is the boat design as well as the team understanding the boat and understanding their competitors. Which race, Christopher, did you think was the most exciting?
I thought the first race between New Zealand and American Magic was really interesting because it was the most time that we saw two boats very close to each other kind of matching up speed and angles, and we really got a good look at how they're flying these boats. And I know it's weird to say flying these boats instead of sailing these boats, but they are up on foils out of the water. And that was the best chance we saw at really kind of figuring out where the challenges are up against the defender. And, you know, as much as it's about boat design, what was also interesting to me was to watch over the course of the 3 days the starts, which are usually very aggressive. They're at the moment right before the start of a race where one boat can really get an advantage over another one. And generally, that is the most aggressive you'll see two boats go at each other during the course of a race, is during that pre-start. And what happened during over the course of the 3 days is the boats got less and less aggressive because it became apparent that this America's Cup is not going to be about being fast on your foils. It's going to be about not going off your foils. Because once these boats come off those foils and go back into the water, they are very slow, which we expected. But I think the surprising thing for a lot of us was how slow these boats are in getting back on the foils. So you saw, you know, syndicates and skippers deciding during the pre-start, it's more important to me to stay on the foils than it is to get an advantage over the other boat. And that was a little disappointing for me because you want races decided by which boat sails faster, not by one mistake that can cost you the entire race. I mean, imagine, Rick, if you had a football game where the first team that gets an interception wins. it's kind of what it was. The first boat that fell off the foils, that was pretty much it. And it made what was initially very aggressive sailing turn into very conservative sailing, and that is a concern.
Well, I remember in race number five, we had this situation where this was the Italian team against the American team, and basically there was a penalty because the Italian team went into the starting area before the start line, so they had to stay back. So the American team you know, basically American Magic had the go-ahead. They were really going strong until they made a turn and then got crashed into the water, almost went over. I mean, that was pretty dramatic moment, but they lost so much ground there.
Yeah, it's the recovery on these boats is, I think, a lot longer and a lot harder than anyone expected. The British had one horrible race, and you know, look, I have my concerns, and I have since day one on their boat design, but this wasn't really their fault, in that the wind was right at that edge where these boats have a hard time foiling, and the British, instead of going up the course towards the next turn, were actually going 90 degrees across the course to get the most wind to try and get back on their foils. And by the time they got on their foils, they were then outside the boundary of the race, were hit with a penalty. They had to stop, go off their foils, and then did the same thing going the other direction, where they spent the whole time going laterally, not making any distance towards the next turn, finally got off their foils, or on their foils, and then went over the boundary again and got penalized. It's just not great sailing. And as much as you know, we have concerns about the design of the boat, and we feel pretty strongly there's a disconnect there on the design of the boat. I think this is also a concern that this doesn't become a sailing race. This becomes a don't fall off the foils race.
Well, Christopher, you talk about, you know, comparing it to a football team. Coaches can lose their jobs for mistakes like that. Players can lose their jobs and get benched or cut. Have you ever seen a captain this close removed and doing things boneheaded? Or do they just say, we think it's better maybe if you don't take the helm anymore?
Well, to Karen's point, right now we don't know what is not going well in that boat, and it could be a sequence of things that are not going well in the boat. We have had skippers get replaced. We had a tactician, a second in command, if you will, on the American boat get replaced in San Francisco. So these changes do happen. I think right now it's more about design and the wind ranges and the foils being an issue than the actual skipper. I wouldn't bench anyone right now. I just think there's not enough data on whether it's the sailors or the boats that are failing right now. And right now, I don't think
early.
It's Ben Ainslie.
Yeah.
I think it's the boat.
Well, and I think also, you know, what we have here is this is more of an exploratory race, because this is the first time they've been on the water together and tested their boats against each other and in these conditions. I think American Magic had more time on the water in Auckland, but, you know, they are all discovering what works and what doesn't work and learning this boat, because it's a brand new design. There's nothing been like this before.
Yeah. So it's too early to answer your question, Rick. But yes, skippers, tacticians, crew members have been changed in America's Cups. But I think it's too early for that right now.
We saw a situation here. One more question before the break. We saw a situation where there was just plain no wind.
Yep.
And so they couldn't race. And that's something that I think a lot of us just take for granted, because we just think, well, just use your inboard motor. Well, you don't have one of those. So how often does that happen?
It happens more often than you would think. There was definitely some wind delays in San Francisco. These boats definitely can sail in lighter winds. There are times where they were sailing three times, almost four times the wind speed. So the wind was 12 to 15 knots, and these boats were sailing 30 to 35 knots. So they can get rolling in pretty light wind. The issue, and again, this is unique to this new class, as Karen pointed out, this is not just a brand new America's Cup boat. This is a brand new type of boat that has never been sailed before. It's not an issue of how much wind they need to sail. It's how much wind they need to get back on the foils. And that's,
right,
I think, a concern. They may have to play with the wind ranges for the Prada Cup and move those up, because the wind ranges were based on what makes these boats go. But I think the real surprise is they need a lot more wind than they expected to get back on the foils.
Did you actually say there wasn't enough wind in San Francisco?
Yep.
It happens. It happens.
About 2 days a year.
It happens part of almost every day, actually. there's such a variety of wind conditions. And, you know, if you go, like, I oftentimes go out sailing for 8 hours, And, you know, during that time, it'll be between 0 and 25 knots. You know, it just really varies.
Yep.
Very interesting. All right. If you would like to call in on the Piano Finders call-in line for this next segment, 800-878-7529. Once again, 800-878-PLAY. You can ask Karen Lyle from SalesportTalk.com or our friend Christopher Kane anything to do with the America's Cup. Of course, this is the 36th America's Cup, sponsored by Prada down in New Zealand. New Zealand is laying back and watching the challengers from the United States, Italy, and the United Kingdom figure out which one of them will be able to take them on head-to-head. We'll take a quick break, and we will come on back on Sports Byline USA. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll see you in a second.
When I can't feel square, they promise you those tales get to the part. I wonder if my parents will ever be apart. My mommy's job is a knife. I thrill to see her and daddy's wife. And daddy's dreams are good.
This is Karen Lyle from SalesPort Talk with a report from the Vandy Globe 2020. The Vandy Globe seems set to deliver a South Pacific Ocean cliffhanger worthy of a Christmas holiday week fireside viewing as the front-running group tried to negotiate a large, tricky, high-pressure system which is blocking their route east. If the plot line were written only by leader Yannick Besthaven, he would be allowed to escape from the aggressive clutches of the anticyclone and to ride off to a much more substantial distance on the two groups that are chasing him. But we don't yet know the outcome of this storm. Here is an update from Charlie Dallin on Sunday.
Last night, European time, I went the front finally passed over me. We've been racing with it for a long time. It was very slow-moving front, and unfortunately for me, I had a fairly light breeze after the front, so lost a bit of ground on Yannick and also a bit on Thomas. Now I've got my wind is a bit different from Yannick, so that's why I cannot make the same course. And yes, another front is arriving towards me, and yeah, I will drive when the wind will turn, and then we will start a long series of drive between the ice zone and a high pressure. The high pressure, unfortunately, the high pressure is moving east, roughly at the same pace as us. So yeah, it's going to be the same scenario for a few days where we'll be stuck between the ice zone and the high pressure. So yeah, we will have to do a lot of drive to stay in the wind. After that, the scenario doesn't look amazing because seems like we could potentially be upwind for a while, but it's still far away from now. So for now, I'm focusing on my short-term strategy. But everything is good on board. My reverse seems to be holding. I'm in the process. The main thing is that my reverse seems to be holding. So that's the good news, and I will be. Probably fairly soon.
For the three boats with sailors Roman, Clarice, and Luis, a new low-pressure system will soon be upon them. The red stripe on their weather files that comes down from New Zealand is a fairly deep low-pressure system generating gusts in excess of 40 knots. The three are going to have to weather the storm between Wednesday and Thursday, with a strong northeasterly winds forecast forcing them to sail upwind in very nasty seas. This is Karen Lyle of SailSport Talk wishing our sailors safety in this heavy weather.
Thank you so much for joining us, Tittling Sports with Rick Tittle. That's me, Karen Lyle from SalesportTalk.com, our friend Christopher Kane for another segment. Piano Finders call in line 800-878-PLAY if you'd like to ask them a question. We are here. Christopher, seeing that at the America's Cup Village down there in New Zealand, they're having a New Year's Eve party with DJs and bands, and they're going to be upwards of 10,000 people. And the way that they have a thing, a COVID QR code that they all scan, they think there's, well, we hear there's no virus down there. All I can say is I'm very jealous that they can gather in great numbers. And apparently they've learned how to listen to doctors, and they basically have no virus down there.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking what happens when you listen to science.
Well, everybody has to quarantine for 14 days before they go in, which is, you know, I'm debating. I'm thinking about going there for in March, and it does mean 2 weeks of time beforehand.
It was pretty crazy, though, watching the TV shots of all the fans on the shore and the crowds and going, man, I remember those days.
I know. It's just not the same here in the United States at the moment. Not at all. And most of Europe, actually. So it's, you know, we're feeling the burn.
Yeah, we are. But, you know, the one thing we did also like on the water was, I mean, we've been, you know, kind of given the British grief, but let's talk for a second about American Magic. I mean, the American boat looked really solid. It's interesting. I think, as Karen pointed out, you know, this is the first time we've seen these boats all together, right? And we see the design differences. And one of the things that became very clear about the American boat is they really treated this more like an airplane than a boat. You look at the hull form, they pushed a lot of the volume in that boat, sort of the amount of volume in that boat forward in the boat. So it almost looks like a whale. It's got a very, very fat front and middle, and then it tapers to this little tail. And I think in terms of looking at these, I'm going to almost put air quotes around boats, they're, I think, the ones that have turned out to be the most aggressive at looking at their boat hull almost as an airplane instead. And they really obviously took this aerodynamic idea and pushed it as far as they could. The Kiwis, their boat, obviously, they have optimized drag. So they're also looking at this in terms of not how fast does the boat move through the water, but how fast is this hull moving through the air. They have almost no boat in the middle of their hull. It's completely flat from bow to stern. And then they have these little pods on either side where the crew hunker down. You can barely even see them. But if you look at the boat either straight from the back or straight from the front, it's almost like a tunnel that goes down through the middle of the boat and is completely flat. And the only thing in there is the sails and the rig. So some very different ideas on how you create a more aerodynamic surface on these boats now as they move through the air. And then the boat that sort of, I think, sort of took up a middle spot between what the Americans and the Kiwis did was the Italian boat, who kind of has a little riff on boat, but didn't quite push the idea of being as aerodynamic as you can like the Americans can, or reducing the windage as much as you can like the Kiwis did. Kind of the 50% solution was the Italians. And so I think it's going to be really interesting in the product up to see who sort of made the right call here in terms of what do you need to focus on to make these boats move quickest.
Well, I think one of the things that stood out for me when I was talking to Terry Hutchinson when we were in Pensacola is he made the comment when we were talking about cavitation and lift that it really is about how fast you get out of the water off up onto those foils. And you saw that with New Zealand when they, you know, were touching the water coming around one of the turns, and they came out of that like in 5 seconds, and it's been taking the other boats maybe 15, 20 sometimes seconds to get out of the water. So we don't really know what this is going to be when we come back to this in February for these Challenger races, because they may be making minor adjustments and also just making sure that those surfaces are extremely smooth. So yeah, that there's less friction and opportunity for turmoil on the surface when those boats are coming out of the water.
Yeah, I think as much as people are looking at the foils, you know, the foils are set now. I think almost all the teams have used all three slots they have available for the foils. But I think you're going to see the undersides of these boats get a rethink in terms of, mm-hmm. of how can I get this hole out of the water faster, because it's that recovery is obviously, and none of us knew, we didn't see this coming either. I don't think we had any expectation that the boats were going to struggle this badly to get back on the foils.
Well, I think when we saw that in race number 5, when the American Magic went on, you know, they healed, how important it is that they stay level. Because if there's something, and I think that was because one of the foils came up a little bit earlier, late. I'm not sure which one it was, but it was the timing of the foil in the turn. And so it went into the water, and it was difficult for them to get that back up to a level surface after.
Yeah.
I think they lost some, like 700 meters or something in that maneuver. But they were so smooth in the other races in race 4, especially downwind. They are fast.
Yeah, they are.
They are
a
so local, fast.
Not only are they fast downwind, they, you know, as we've talked in the past, sailboats can't sail directly to the next mark. They kind of have to angle towards it, so they have to keep switching sides and changing tacks. So if you can point the boat a little closer to that mark, you can sail less distance. And even if you're sailing the same speed as the other boat, because you're sailing less distance, you get to that mark faster. And what was impressive to me about the American boat downwind was not only was it incredibly fast, they were pointing lower as well. And you rarely see a boat that is faster and points better than the competitors. You usually get one or the other. It's very rare that you see both. So they, in terms of optimizing that boat, they've got a complete locomotive downwind.
Christopher, how does the New Zealand team approach these three challengers? Do they kind of sit back and say, yeah, tell us when you want to race and we'll be ready in a rather kind of smug champion way? Or do they sit there and pore over every design and look at the improvements and try to glean what they can from all this, like just do in very intense scouting?
Yes, the answer is they will be scouting aggressively everything is happening. You know, they learned from what happened in San Francisco. In San Francisco, they kind of maxed out their boat early and couldn't find any more speed. So when the Americans late in that America's Cup started finding extra speed in the boat, the Kiwis couldn't match it. So they definitely learned their lesson from that. So, yes, they are going to be aggressively watching what's happening in the Challenger Series and trying to figure out, you know, which boat in which wind condition seems to have the most advantage. And then based on that, why do we think it has that advantage? Is it the foil? Is it the way they're sailing the boat? One of the black boxes on these boats right now is what's going on inside the big mainsail, that big sail on the back that provides most of the power. One of the unique design features this year is it's not one sail. It's actually two sails that are attached together and create almost an airplane wing. But the machinery inside that, every team is tuning that sail with different types of hardware a little differently. And no one really knows how that's happening. So that's also one of the black boxes, is they're going to be looking very carefully at the shape and how the shape is moving that mainsail over the course of the Challenger Series. So trust me, they're not being smug about this at all. They are going to be aggressively on top of every single race.
Well, let's talk for a moment about the players, because there's definitely some history in competition. I know when on the second day you texted me and
yep.
said Spittle is in Dean Barker's head. Now, so just for our listeners, Dean Barker is on the American Magic team and Jimmy Spittle is on the Italian team, and they have some history, and I am sure that they were very aware of each other on these races.
Yeah, and they've kind of switched places. So, of course, sailing fans remember the America's Cup in San Francisco because it was one of the greatest comebacks in sporting history, not just sailing history. And the American skipper was Jimmy Spittle, and the Kiwi sailor was Dean Barker. Dean Barker, the Kiwi, is now the American sailor. And Jimmy, the American sailor, who's actually not American, is now over at Italian, and he's not Italian. So very much like soccer. And, yeah, so they were in a pre-start, and Jimmy completely pulled a fast one on Dean Barker and kind of put him in a really bad spot and won the pre-start kind of going away. And, yeah, I texted Karen. I'm like, yep, Jimmy Spittle is still in Dean Barker's head.
By the way, Jimmy Spittle, no relation to me, Rick Tittle.
Right, and I guess it's Spit Hill. And he's actually going to be the captain of the SailGP USA team. So yep. So he must have some, since that's a national team, he must have some American citizenship, yeah?
He does. He actually lives in San Diego. So, yeah. But it's there's a lot of history there. And, you know, then you've got Ben Ainslie, who is very aware of the fact that the British lost the first America's Cup and have never won it since. And talks about that constantly, but he wants to bring it back to England. So there's a lot of history about Ben Ainslie as well. And then you got the young kid, Peter Burling, who's kind of the Patrick Mahomes. He's the young new rock star who's piloting the Kiwi boat. So, yeah, there's a lot of history behind the skippers as well.
Karen, when you say you're thinking about going down there, obviously you'd spend a fortnight in a hotel, whatever, first. But what would it be as far as you just want to be there to soak it all in, or do you think you can really get a vantage point and watch this race?
Well, basically, when we get into the races, the players are so focused on the game that you only get windows of time to be able to talk to them. So if you're not on the premises, it's hard to really get the story in the moment. And when I was doing the SailGP race here in San Francisco, you know, I actually had my boat at the dock at the St. Francis Yacht Club in a little neutral zone between where SailGP had it and where the members of St. Francis had it. And I was there for the whole week. And I got so much more information. I got an opportunity to go on the boat, to be in the technical things. It really has to do with what opportunities are given by the teams and the sponsors of the race to the media to get an insider view. And really the issue for me is COVID and the amount of time that it takes to be able to go. And so I'm just going to have to see about vaccines and what's happening in January before I make that decision.
All right. We're going to wrap it up. Karen Lyle of SailSportTalk.com. Go to the website. And Christopher Kane, Johnny on the spot, as always, with the America's Cup. Happy holidays, you two. And we'll see you on the other side.
You too, Rick. Thanks very much.
Happy holidays, Rick, and to all of our listeners.
All right. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come on back.